Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here continuing our expectations series, having a lot of fun with this, bringing on analysts to do their favorite players in a lot of cases. Once again, I'm going to remind folks, we're doing two disparate players. So we have, in this case, one offense and one defensive player, like we've done on most of these shows. Sometimes it's two defensive players, but we're avoiding players of the same position group because that's not the kind of show we're doing. We're not debating the position group directly. We have a lot of analysts opining on why their player has a different spot or role within a position group, perhaps. Anyway, joining me tonight is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, always a pleasure to talk football with you.
Thanks again for having me, Ken. I'm excited to be here to talk about two players I think have, you know, an interesting potential in this season. You can find me on Twitter at Gabe Fergie, love to come on the show and talk about these guys. So, you know, we can just jump right into it. I think the first player that I wanted to bring up was Ardarius Washington. You know, he's someone who is another interesting second-year player the Ravens got as an undrafted free agent last year. Very highly regarded in some circles. I think we did a show about Geno Stone, very highly rated by PFF. Ardarius Washington, also very highly rated by PFF. They had a second-round grade on him, but the measurables led him to be undrafted. 5'8", less than 180, ran a slow 40. Those are not things that lead to being drafted in the NFL. NFL loves size, a cornerback. He loves size everywhere, but mostly it's a very important cornerback.
Yeah.
Also has short arms. So all those things are kind of negatives at him, whether he's playing cornerback or safety. And, you know, that led to the Ravens being able to pick him up. And I think he has an interesting profile in terms of his ability to kind of diagnose. He's very instinctual, can break on the ball really well. We saw him make a lot of plays in college, and, you know, he was kind of all over the field in the preseason when he played for the Ravens last year, predominantly as that slot cornerback.
Yeah, it's he only played 7 snaps on defense last year, so it wasn't a lot, but we saw him also in the preseason, and he was effective there. And maybe that's what you're referring to, because he was one of the standouts, along with some other guys who honestly didn't get a lot of play last year. Jalen Ferguson, for example, had a big preseason, very disappointing regular season after that. But Ardarius's season ended with a foot injury. I never did hear what the nature of that foot injury was, and if it's Liz Frank, I'd be concerned about him being back. I don't know if he was at the OTAs initially, so I really don't know exactly what his status is currently.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I haven't also seen any details about what the injury was. You know, they were kind of decimated at the cornerback position last year, so if it was something that was significant, I mean, that's probably what kept him off the field. You think if it was something that was a little more minor, he might have made it back onto the roster eventually. That didn't happen for him. And like you said, he didn't really play much during the actual regular season last year. So pretty much all we're going off of was what he looked like as a college player, how he looked in training camp and preseason. So I think that's kind of, you know, it's a jumping off point, but it's a big question mark.
3 years in college, he left as a redshirt sophomore, if I recall correctly. And his redshirt freshman year, he was a Big 12 defensive freshman of the year. He might have been the defensive freshman of the year. He's also on the All-America freshman team from the Pro Football Writers. 5 picks that year, so definitely a lot of ball skills shown. And didn't have any picks in his last college year. Played a little bit less, only played 9 games. But anyway, you know, certainly came out of college with a pedigree on everything, but as you mentioned, the measurables profile, the size, a big problem. One thing that it's kind of underrated about him because of his size, I think people don't think about it too much, is he's a very powerful dude and a very explosive dude, which is important when you're having to cover that whip route, need to stick your foot in the ground, go the other direction really quickly on generally a slot receiver who might not be any faster than you. You know, some you have slot receivers who have really elite speed, but most slot receivers are kind of slower, craftier, get the guy to make a mistake right off the line of scrimmage guy, Welker. And I mean, it just doesn't have real top end speed. But he's a guy who definitely can force the other person to read his leverage and make a move opposite that. Ardarius Washington, 17 bench reps which is unusually high for a, you know, a small corner. Having short arms does help, but that's still exceptional. The Ravens signed him to a record UDFA deal, their highest of the season. I won't say record. They might have signed another guy for $100,000, but I believe that's what Ardarius got. And the total pool is like $150,000 or some such. But anyway, he got a big percentage of the total pool in terms of the relative amount. That pool's probably been growing, so that's why that might be a little higher. He'll still only be 23 in November, which is kind of nice for a second-year player.
Yeah, I mean, he has a lot going for him. And, you know, if you can look past the measurables, you see a player who's very impactful on the field. And like you said, he's explosive, short area burst, short area quickness is very good. The long speed might not be there, but that might not be as important for, you know, the slot corner role. He's often not, you know, covering someone on like a nine route out of the slot. That's that's pretty rare for that position, especially in man coverage. It's unlikely that he's going to be in that kind of position. So I think that, you know, that's where he does profile in the NFL. Probably a little undersized to play outside. I would say definitely undersized to play outside, probably undersized to play safety as well, although that's where he played mostly in college, although he did cover the slot a bit in college as well. So I think it really just depends kind of on what the Ravens are looking for in that position. You know, if you look at the cornerback room they have now, you have, you know, Brandon Stevens, he's bigger. He looks more like a safety outside cornerback hybrid. They played him mostly at safety last year. After the Sean Elliott injury, he played some at free safety, some in the box. He kind of moved around a lot. I don't see him necessarily being a slot cornerback in the NFL. I don't think he has that quickness that we talked about that Washington does have. So they kind of have disparate skill sets there. One's bigger, stronger, more physical. One is more short area quick, twitchy, and he has that kind of ability to keep up with those, you know, shifty slot receivers that can be a nuisance in the NFL for sure.
Yeah, I agree completely on both counts, on Washington and on Stevens. Stevens looks to me more like a guy who, you know, more like Jimmy Smith on the outside. First of all, he's fairly compact at 6'2", 206, which is great cornerback size if you can play fast. And, you know, he could well be one of these guys that's just a big physical bump the other guy out of bounds kind of cornerback. He used the sideline very effectively and you know, narrows that path as receivers go down the field. What's going to, I think, determine it for Stevens on the outside is whether or not he can keep himself from misstepping at the top of the route tree. If he can mirror receivers, if he can figure out their leverage, then I think he'll be perfectly fine at outside corner. I would agree with you. I don't think he really makes sense in the slot, and there's not room for him at safety with all the talent the Ravens have there. If he did come to safety because of a spate of injuries and maybe even a spate of injuries with also Clark leaving, that might leave a dime back role back open for him. But I think he's probably where he needs to be at on the outside at corner. It'd be good to have some competition for Washington. Washington, in a lot of ways, I think is lined up to win this job. I don't think there's a immediate competitor with him. How are you feeling about that? What's his real competition on this team?
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought at first it might be Pepe Williams or Damarian Williams, you know, the fourth round pick. He kind of profiles a little bit more as a slot corner too, a little smaller, 5'10". He doesn't have that blazing speed. I think he's another player who's a little more like physical, someone who can, you know, come up and support the run. I like, you know, some of what I've seen out of him, but he's also, you know, not the biggest guy either. So he's not going to, I think that's where the competition is probably going to be. The other guy to consider is the new signing, Kyle Fuller. He played mostly outside corner for the majority of his career. Last year in Denver, he started outside, got benched, moved to the slot.
Got benched again.
Still played some more in the slot. He had a bad season. And I think that that's the reason why the Ravens were able to get him this point in free agency. You know, he's a hometown Baltimore kid, so it's nice to see. We have yet to see what his contract looks like. You know, if it's a vet minimum deal, he's not a lock to make the roster. If it's more like, I think Jeff Cerebeck mentioned on Twitter that he was expecting somewhere around $2 to $3 million. That's a little bit more money than I think he is more of like, you know, more in consideration to be maybe your third outside corner.
I seriously hope not. Yeah. I mean, we don't know yet, but I mean, to me, Okay, I guess if it was $2 million, I shouldn't be all that upset. Or if they guarantee him $500,000 for this year, because you know, they, even if they cut him, they, you know, they want to take care of him. But I'd still be a little bit upset if it was, if it really approached $3 million. If it's $1 million with incentives to three, I think I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But if it's starting off at $2 or $3 million and there's a significant amount guaranteed there, I'd be pretty upset based on, you know, his age and how he played last year.
Yeah, no, I think that's reasonable, and I think that money could have been better spent on other positions. So that would be a questionable deal if it comes in at that amount. And you know, it also could speak to how the Ravens feel about, you know, Marcus Peters coming back. That could be a reason why they decided to go that route with Fuller, because they don't know what he's going to look like coming off the ACL. It's important that they have some depth there.
Oh, it's absolutely important to have depth, period. Even if they thought Peters was healthy now, I mean, Peters and Humphrey are two now, you know, veteran players that are always at risk of, well, any cornerback is, of getting hurt when they, you know, play physically. I guess one of the things about Fuller coming in is it doesn't really seem to be direct competition in the slot to me for Ardarius Washington, but if he can win an outside job, then you may have Humphrey move back to the slot.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we've seen that a lot out of Humphrey in the past. I mean, 2 years ago in particular, I think he was primarily, you know, starting at outside corner. Then he would come in and play the slot on nickel packages, which he ended up being in there probably 50 to 60% of the time, just based off the, you know, the amount of times that, you know, offenses put three and four wide receivers out there. And, you know, he plays well in the slot, but I think we'd both agree he's better suited playing outside. But that also means that you have to have a good outside corner to be able to take his spot if he is going to move into the slot. So there's potentially a lot of moving pieces depending on how Brandon Stevens develops. You know, Jalen Armour Davis might come in and be like a guy who can start right away outside. Yeah. So there's a lot of options that the Ravens have. And I think it gets back to what you were saying. There's going to be competition at a lot of different positions. There's health questions, and it's good to have a lot of bodies. We've seen this position get decimated by injury over and over again for the Ravens. So hopefully that's not going to be the case, but in the end, we just want to have the best players out there. And, you know, I think Washington is going to be given that chance.
Yeah, I think if you look in terms of who his competition is, it's not just maybe Williams 1, Stevens 2 kind of players, or even Fuller in there if he somehow moves Humphrey back to the slot. The other guy who could be a competition, who's going to lose snaps to, is a possible preponderance of big nickel looks. Mm. So if the Ravens decide against 12 personnel, they're always going to play big nickel. And it was a sometimes in the past. It definitely wasn't an always, but it could be always with the set of safeties they have. And or if, you know, other teams run 12 a fair amount, but if they also decide, hey, there's some teams with big receivers in the slot who are not particularly fast, we love the idea of Kyle Hamilton on him, or we love the idea of having Chuck Clark starting off with press on that guy, especially if he's a big part of their passing attack. Then I think he could lose, you know, snaps there. And you know, the league probably plays about 85% or 80 to 85% anyway, 11 personnel. When I mean that, I mean 11 and more, meaning 01 and 10 included in that. What that basically tells you is that there are an awful lot of nickel snaps that have to be divided somehow. And so there's going to be ways to do it.
Yeah. And I think, it allows you to have versatility in your defensive back room, which is important. And because there are a lot of different types of receivers, like you mentioned, there's the big guys. A lot of times you'll put a big receiver in the slot. Sometimes you'll put your best receiver in the slot just because you get better, releases and matchups out of that position. And depending on the types of bodies that opposing teams have, sometimes it's good to have that smaller, shiftier corner. You know, the Tavon Young that we've had in the past, Ladarius Webb has kind of been able to be that guy in the past who can cover that type of receiver. And Washington has that profile of that player. And I think he profiles best out of the current Ravens, you know, defensive backs to take that role. So, you know, I'd love to see him in there. It is going to be a numbers game though. You know, the Ravens have a lot of good defensive backs now. A lot of players who are in the mix, and that's a good thing right now when we're looking at depth. But, you know, the guys who are on the, you know, so to speak, bubble or proverbial bubble, you know, Washington might be one of those guys. In terms of the contract, he's not someone you're really committed to. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, being a second year player, I mean, they didn't draft him, so they don't have to live with that mess. But, you know, I would think he's behind Fuller, for example, as a player. He's probably, Stevens is probably ahead of him because they expended a third round pick and they don't want to look foolish on that. But in fact, all selections now are sunk costs. So if Ardarius Washington's one of your top guys, you'd be foolish not to keep him, even if you have to cut a draft pick of some sort. The way I'm looking at the roster right now, it could be that there's a safety cut for him. You know, Geno Stone probably is not completely safe this year. That would be the one who would do it. But I think he'll make the team. That would give him five. I think if they keep five, they could well keep six corners. It's possible they'll only keep five, but I think it's very possible they'll keep six. And if you look down the list, you'd start with Humphrey, Jalen Armour Davis, and Peters in that group. And then maybe Fuller makes it, maybe he doesn't. I think Ardarius Washington does make it. And then Damarian Williams, you just drafted him. I think you'd look pretty foolish if you cut a fourth round draft pick right away. But more than likely, I think they probably, if their depth holds up, they probably keep six at that position, given some of the recent horse crap that's happened year after year.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of fungibility at the end of the roster. You know, there's a sixth wide receiver, a fourth running back, you know, a sixth defensive lineman, a fifth linebacker. You know, recently the Ravens have kept five linebackers, but this year looks like it might be a four linebacker group. So that allows you the option to keep a sixth cornerback and five safeties or six safeties. That's something different this year, potentially.
With the rules that the NFL now has in terms of IR too, there's a lot of flexibility that teams like the Ravens can get very creative using to get a mildly injured player onto the roster. So he provides still that depth, and they've got a number of guys who are potential handshake deals. Fuller is among those, you know, that you could bring back on a handshake deal. If you cut him, I don't think anybody else is really going to want him. And then there's a lot of others. I mean, Urban is a handshake deal to have a handshake deal. And the running back they got, well, I'm forgetting his name, Mike Davis. He'd be a handshake deal as well. So they have probably about four or five guys now on the roster who make obvious kind of handshake deals. So that means you can slip through four or five guys if you want onto the roster. Last year, they really took advantage of that. This year, they may not use all of them on handshake deals, but they well might, or they might come close based on the amount of depth they have now.
Yeah, and I think Tony Jefferson might be another guy who
has that
connection, and he's been on the team before, a good veteran who you can have that arrangement with for sure. You know, maybe the new Anthony Levine, so to speak. Mm-hmm. There are options, and there's going to be that potential to make some moves like that. You know, you never hope for injuries, obviously, but you have to expect something's going to happen. Like almost always there's somebody that's not ready to go at the start of the season. You can put them on the IR and have them come back, you know, week four or week six, however long it takes. And that depth is it when that becomes important.
Right. Your next guy that we're going to talk about, there's an interesting potential designation for him too, but we'll talk about that in a moment. I've got a couple more goals, or I've got some goals for Washington I wanted to talk about, if you don't mind. Stay with NFL slot receivers is probably the big one. Needs to contribute as a downhill defender. Obviously, size has been an issue. Let's see what we've heard about him in terms of his aggressiveness as a tackler, maybe getting after the quarterback, because that's something the Ravens have liked to do out of the slot under Wink, even under Pease, but under Wink for sure. So that's something that's in that job description. I want to see him come downhill pretty well in a running back too. And you can't afford to be fragile at that position in the Ravens system, because unlike the Marvin Lewis days where the outside corners are obviously being told, don't stick your neck in the pile. Yeah. All the cornerbacks are really expected to play pretty physically.
Yeah, I think that's definitely somewhere where he can improve. You know, obviously being on the slighter side, it's a little more challenging to kind of be that physical player. Although I think he has the mentality, you know, just watching the way he's very aggressive in terms of his ability to kind of, you know, identify, you know, what he needs to do and read and react. I think he almost has like a linebacker mentality, kind of like a Marlon Humphrey ability. But the size is going to be something that keeps him in trouble sometimes in the open field when he's going up against bigger tight ends, for instance, or big running backs. There's a chance he just gets run over, and he just doesn't have that size that some of the other defensive backs have.
Yeah, it does force him to be an excellent form tackler with who he is. He has to play leverage properly. Means if his job is the outside leverage on that runner, he better be on that outside thigh. If his job is to take the runner down in the open field, he's probably coming in low, and he's going to know how to do it. So I'm optimistic, but we'll see how it plays out. Let's talk about what a good and a great year would be. If you don't have any additional goals, you have any additional goals you want to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, we can kind of mix it in here and start with the good perhaps. And I think something that I would like to see from him would just be more contribution on special teams. And I think that's something that you really need from these kind of like fringe bubble players. And maybe if, you know, he proves himself more as a slot cornerback, as kind of like the starting slot cornerback, then he doesn't have to be that. But if he's more on the back end of the depth chart, he's going to have to be someone who can contribute consistently as a special teams player. He was playing some special team snaps when he was active last year in the three games that he was active, but he wasn't one of the top special teams contributors. I think he was only in certain packages. So I think that's something that he can definitely improve on, kind of learn that skill set perhaps more than he has in the past. And then, you know, with that to build off of, you know, just be part of that defensive back room, be part of, you know, that one of those packages where he's out there, as we talked about, as a guy who's kind of the go-to defensive back when there's one of those smaller shifty wide receivers. And I think that's something that I would like to see from him in this second year. I think the Ravens would like to see that from him. That's like you said, they cut Tavon Young partially because salary cap reasons, partially because I think they had someone that they counted on with our Darius Washington. So that's what I want to see from him. That would be a good season.
Okay, I think that's good. So a designated role as you're kind of defining it, and better play on special teams. That's actually, I think I like yours better than mine, but I'm just going to read you mine verbatim as we'll have it here. Returns early in the season and plays at least some slot cornerback during the season due to the quality of practice. So they won't know. We might not see him in the preseason. It's possible. I don't really know the status of his injury, but if he plays in those games, that should provide him a good opportunity. He's excelled there in the past. I'd hope he'd do it again. But otherwise, it's got to be from practice. And so in some ways, that's the best way to know how the coaches feel about him. And proves adequate or better in the role, and his size is not a glaring issue on the field. I didn't have anything about special teams, but, you know, just in the role they choose for him, that his size is not a glaring issue. That'd be a good season for me.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned the size multiple times, and, you know, there's a reason for that. He's going to be one of the smallest players in the NFL, definitely one of the smallest cornerbacks in the NFL. And, you know, we have seen some of these small wide receivers taken. You know, the Steelers just drafted Calvin Austin. He's like 5'7", you know, 180. So, you know, there's a role for defensive backs who can cover that. And, you know, Calvin Austin is a speedy guy, and, you know, our Darius doesn't have that kind of skill set, but if he's running shorter routes, if he's, you know, he's the kind of guy who can cover you in the, you know, the 10 to 20 yard space. And, you know, we can go to the great season. And I think for me, that's him just latching onto that starting slot cornerback role and running with it, you know, being the guy who is your designated third cornerback playing in the slot. I mean, you know, there might be some situations where we talked about where Kyle Hamilton's out there against bigger receivers. There might be some other cornerback packages as well. But if he can become that guy, that's a huge role on the defense. It's a very important role. We've seen it being manned by some of the best cornerbacks on the Ravens roster over the past decade. And I think I'm not sure if he can, you know, fill those big shoes that have been there in the past. But if he can play that to a high degree, that's a great season for him.
Yeah. I agree. I've got almost exactly the same thing. I've stated it slightly differently. Wins the starting job out of camp preseason, establishes himself as a likely three-year starter, meaning 2, 3, and 4, at slot cornerback with play that's above average. That's all I need, above average. And here's the big one. He incents no rotation from Stevens or Fuller. So he's got to outplay those two guys, who I think are just kind of average NFL talents on the upside at this point. So Stevens is on the outside. Yeah, it'd be great if he kind of pressed him for play, but if he actually is forcing any rotation because of who he is, that's bad. If Stevens comes in on the outside for Peters for the fourth quarter of a game that the Ravens are, you know, blowout or win or loss, no problem. But if they bring Stevens on and effectively are replacing Washington, I'd be pretty upset with Washington over that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it might just get back to whether the question is, can you have, you know, Stevens on the outside and Peters on the outside and Humphrey in the slot? Is that a better three corners than having, you know, Humphrey, Peters on the outside and Washington in the slot? I think that's the question that's going to be the important one for Washington.
And I'm being clear. That's exactly the situation. I want Washington to clearly beat out Peters. Yeah. Beat out Stevens and force Humphrey to the outside where he should be better too.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, okay. We ready to move on to Juwan James here?
Yep. We can do that. Okay.
Two interesting players, man. You get the best. You get the best of these. I'll talk a little bit about Juwan James' background. He had a solid first 5 years with the Dolphins. He was drafted number 19 overall in 2014. Solid NFL lineman, got hurt in 2018, his fifth year with them, did not get re-signed. He got signed by Denver. He played all of 63 snaps for them. So he's another Denver reject sort of thing, along with Kyle Fuller. Yeah. He hasn't played since 2019 due to injury, been barely played, just got into three games for 63 total snaps in 2019. He's just turned 30, we're recording this actually 2 days before his 30th birthday, I believe, but he will have turned 30 by the time you hear this. Ravens signed him to a two-year deal. It includes $2.5 million in non-guaranteed money, so they could cut him and definitely get that back, and I'm not sure about the last $500,000. It's listed as a roster bonus. I don't know whether that's fifth day of the league year in his case, or if his roster bonus is you make the team, you get it. So it could be either, and that's actually a fairly significant distinction in his case.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the money either, but I think, you know, you covered it pretty well. Completely played, well, not entirely, I would say about 80% of his snaps have been right tackle.
Right tackle,
I think he played a little bit of left tackle in his rookie year, did not play well, and he's been right tackle his entire career. Kind of gotten better and better, I think, you know, as his career progressed. Signed a pretty big contract with Denver at the time for a right tackle. It was one of the higher right tackle contracts that had been given. And like you said, barely played. He did opt out, I think, of 2020 because of COVID. So I don't think it was injury related, I know he did get injured the previous year. So maybe it was kind of an extension of that. And then, you know, COVID happened and he did end up opting out. And then before the 2021 season, tore his Achilles, the Broncos cut him because he tore it and it wasn't in a practice facility. The Ravens took advantage of the opportunity to kind of get somebody, kind of a lottery ticket, right? They didn't pay him too much guaranteed money, opportunity to potentially get, you know, a quality starting tackle, more so looking to this year than the previous year. And I think it's interesting, you know, he was kind of starting to ramp up some activities last year, but never made it onto the roster. I think the plan all along was for this season to be the time where he would be an option at that position. And I think, you know, it's a really good insurance that the Ravens have there at right tackle. It's, I think he's kind of flown under the radar and a lot of conversations as someone who the Ravens do have on their roster. You know, the right tackle position is probably deeper now than it has been in quite a while. You have probably four guys who can play right tackle for you on the roster. Left tackle is a bit more questionable, and I don't think James is really the solution there. But if you can, you know, put Moses at left tackle potentially, and then you can put James at right tackle, that's not the worst situation for you to be in as a Stanley insurance policy.
It could be worse. I guess I would say that. I think Falele is the guy who's probably being overlooked in the scenarios you're talking about. That I personally, I'm fine if Falele wins the job right out of camp. Moses is put in bubble wrap for the year, and they're able to kind of decide at some point that they don't need James. And there is a way they can do that, despite the fact that he's a veteran and he has a salary and whatnot. If he's cut for game one and then he returns, presumably on the handshake deal for the same money, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of demand for services. I might be wrong. He's a tackle, so somebody else could pay him some money and say, hey, you know, we'll give you $4 million. The Ravens only want to pay you the same $3 million they agreed to pay you before. That you've outgrown that contract. You know, somebody could give him more money who's really desperate for a tackle. But I think more than likely he comes back, and then if he starts week two, you can cut him at any point during the season, and you do not owe him the rest of his money for the year. So you end up having a way to save a little money, and that gives you time to evaluate your three-man tackle group. Whether or not McCary has been called on somewhere else, if you're going to use him as a fourth tackle, say, you would have that option too. But the hope is that obviously that Falele is the big star of training camp and preseason, looks good enough to jump in right away, and his mirror looks good enough that it might even hold up on the left side. If you had all those happen, I don't think you have a need for Juwan James on this team.
I agree with you. If that happens, I do think that's a bit optimistic. In my estimation, you know, I think there's a reason why Falele went in the fourth round. Even though some, you know, places had him rated higher than that, I think he's more of a project tackle. I think he needs a year to kind of learn the position in the NFL caliber. I mean, you know, this isn't a Falele podcast, so I don't want to talk about too much about him, but it is relevant to James's trajectory. So I think that, you know, he's someone who he needs to be in a system where he's not protected, to see how he works and see how he looks in that type of, you know, in a five-man offense where he doesn't have help, where they're not doing some of the run-heavy scheme. I know the Ravens are run-heavy, but there are times you're going to have to be in true pass sets. And I think that's where Falele, you know, he struggled a little bit in college. And maybe he can be there, and maybe he can, you know, improve his, you know, his ability to mirror, like you said. I think he's okay as a run blocker. You know, he's big, so that helps, and he can definitely move people, but he's not as physical as someone with his size could suggest. He's not Orlando Brown, for instance. So, you know, if you can have that type of Orlando Brown, you know, first year starter at right tackle, that's great. You know, that's kind of the pipe dream. And you get that player in the fourth round and you put him out there, maybe not week one, maybe week six. That's more realistic to me. In that scenario, do you still feel comfortable cutting James if you see enough out of Falele, but you don't see him as the immediate starter?
Thinking back to Brown and his rookie year and how that went, I mean, Brown looked like he should have been given the job right out of a training camp. He was drafted 83, Falele's 110, so approximately a round later. I understand the hesitation, and I'm not saying that the chance is more than about 25 to 30% that it ends up being that way, that Falele looks good enough to really take a chance on. I think you're probably right. A project year is appropriate. We may find a lot of things about Falele. We might find he's not strong enough for the NFL. Yeah. That's quite possible. But he's got a lot of technique things to worry about. You know, had the discussion about him recently with Alec Boulianos. Playing high came up as a possibility. He's a lot of a patty cake player right now as a pass blocker, which to me is bad because he should really be using his punch. He has great length. And, you know, if the Ravens can teach him those things, then, you know, probably that's a time consuming process. But if he's, you know, would it be great if he shows up at camp, he's had positional coaching already. He's gone to La Charles Bentley school or some other, you know, real offensive line individual coaching guru would say, no, okay, armpit, you know, and fake left, go right with the armpit move there. And if they can teach him some of the, you know, the basics, frankly, of knocking a smaller pass rusher, and, you know, every pass rusher in the NFL underweighs him by 100 pounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, what he can do to them ought to be pretty, pretty remarkable. But yeah, it's, you know, you're probably right. He's probably a year away. I always hope for more. Brown did not look like a physical specimen when he came in, and the measurables were laughable, frankly. That's what got him to drop to the point he did. So, you know, maybe a guy with his nose a little bit to the grindstone in terms of really wanting to learn the position more has a chance. We'll see. He's got about 6 weeks before camp. This would be a great time to use for that.
Yeah, yeah. And with Brown, you know, he actually really underwent a body transformation. You know, after Oklahoma, I think he dropped something like 40 pounds, really got in better shape, and I think it showed in his ability that, you know, he tested horribly. You know, Falele also tested horribly, kind of like equivalently bad. In like the, I think like the fifth percentile in terms of the overall like athletic score. They were both really, really poor. So it's, you know, it's hard to see him becoming like quite as nimble as Brown turned out to be, but maybe I'm wrong. And he does have, I think, pretty good moving skills for a guy his size. He doesn't look like a plotter. He is he's lighter in his feet than you would expect, but I don't know if he kind of has the ability to kind of connect the dots, so to speak. Like he's a little bit hesitant, I think, and is almost scared of like hurting someone, it looks like at times. So
yeah, I agree. I see that too. That's the patty kick offensive line play is really getting at that. And you know, he's got a pretty good mirror, but he's got to know when to convert. It's kind of like speed to power as a rusher. Mm-hmm. You need to know when to convert mirror to defending the back pylon of the pocket with length. So he needs to, he's got tremendous length. Guy gets it underneath him, outside him of a speed rush. He needs to be not afraid to push him with all he's got towards that back pylon, and hopefully have that be enough to get the playoff. Ricky Wagner, a guy who played with length. He didn't have great length himself personally, but he played effectively with what he had in terms of getting a guy to the back pylon of the pocket. And of course, Orlando Brown, that's his game. So
yeah,
exceptional.
You know, and getting back to Juwan James, maybe we're not also giving him enough credit as a player himself. You know, you mentioned he hasn't played very much over the past three seasons, really. So we don't really know like the shape he's in, you know, what he's been doing over this time. Obviously, rehabbing injury has been part of it. But he could have, you know, a chip on his shoulder. You know, he did get a very big contract. He was let go under somewhat sketchy circumstances. And he, you know, he does have that first round pedigree of a quality starting tackle in the NFL. So if he can be that player, he might be the best right tackle on the Ravens offense right now. Like he might just go out and win the right tackle starting position. That's not outside of the realm of possibility. Then you could, like you said, put Moses kind of on the sidelines, have him just as the backup swing tackle guy. And then in that situation, you probably either have Falele as inactive on most game days. I think that's probably where he's going to be at the start of the season regardless. If you have James as your starting right tackle, that's not necessarily a bad thing if he comes out and plays at that level that he was before he got hurt.
Yeah, to me, I think Falele is going to get some activations over James. So let's say they keep them both. And you really want to sit one lineman. I think you do keep all of the interior guys active. They'll have five interior guys and four tackles. I think they'll keep all the interior guys active on a weekly basis, whoever that ends up being on the team, by the way, which we really don't know. And then James sits. And the reason Falele will be activated is because they have a number of gadget plays they could use him in where they really want his size and not just James's size. Even if James kind of looks like he can play tackle again, I don't think you necessarily keep him around for what effectively is the rest of that game each week. Yeah. You may activate him the next week and you may start him the next week, but I think that, you know, Falele has much more use to say a fullback or a extra sixth offensive lineman.
Yeah, that could very well be the case. I mean, just having that size out there in certain packages, jumbo packages, definitely has a certain appeal to it. Maybe he'll catch a touchdown too.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I when the Ravens ran that QB power play on 4th and 2 against Seattle in 2019, and they love QB power. 4th and 1.5 or less, they love QB power for just a lot of those opportunities. But when they did it against Seattle in particular, they put every big player they had on the field. And that would have been another case. Now, Harbaugh's shown this love for this in the past is where they'd all love to get Falele on the field as an extra offensive lineman there, maybe even more than Hurst or the tight end, who was probably the lightest player on the field for the Ravens on that play, other than Jackson. So pretty good chance. And you look back to how they used Haloti Ngata in 2008 to 2010 and how effective that was. I could easily see Harbaugh wanting to try and go back to some of that.
Yeah, that could be interesting. And you know, there's a couple guys who could potentially fit that role as well. Maybe the Travis Jones could be out there as a fullback with a Patrick Ricard. You know, he's a big body too. We can move. It'd be interesting to see if there's some, you know, fun creative packages with some of these big guys. I could see that as being, you know, a weapon with a guy like Lamar Jackson for sure.
Okay, I've got about four goals, and they're very brief for Juwan James, and I want to hear yours too. So if you want to alternate with me, let's just go ahead. But goal number one for me is health. One word. Yeah,
I think that was what I was going to say too. That's the key. We haven't seen it for a very long time, and for him to have any real impact, he has to be healthy. That's above and beyond everything else.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay, so the second one is maybe one that it may be unfair, and it may not be, because I really don't know the circumstances of exactly why he was cut in Denver. It was a $51 million deal that he got $17 million of before he was cut. But I want a demonstration that he still wants to play football. He's got a relatively small contract on the line, but he's playing for a big prize next year. If this is an end game for him, I want the Ravens to have no part of it. Absolutely no part of it. I do not want the last $3 million of earnings for the thing. You know, you remember what Ed Reed said about his time with either the Texans or the Jets. He said, thanks for the $3 million.
Yeah.
That is the last thing I want Juwan James telling his grandkids, even if it's in an empty room otherwise, about his career. If he's here playing for the Baltimore Ravens, it better be because he wants to this year.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I mentioned the situation about why he was cut, and it might have been just because of injuries compounding itself and, you know, opting out of the COVID year. But he also got hurt doing an off-season workout outside of its facilities. Right. And if you remember, there was actually kind of like a bit of a hubbub about it because, you know, there were some people who were very upset that he was released because of that. And it was due to like the nature of the way that contracts work. They're allowed to cut him if you get hurt, if you don't get hurt playing on the facilities. But a lot of players have to do that because they can't train in the facilities during the offseason. So you're trying to make yourself better, but then you injure yourself and then you're liable for it. So we'll see how he comes back from that. I think, you know, I don't know who else was interested in bringing him back last year after the injury. I don't know if there were other teams looking for him or the Ravens were the only team who were kind of in on him. But they saw it as an opportunity. I mean, I would imagine they would have spoken to him and had some sense of what kind of player he was.
Well, I mean, that's fair. They certainly would have spoken to him. They certainly would have, you know, brought him in, worked him out, they wouldn't have worked him out because he was hurt when he signed the deal.
Yeah.
But they would have talked to him and try and get a sense of who he was. But they also protected themselves. And with a lot of non-guaranteed money that says basically, hey, you know, we're going to cut you if you're not really interested in playing. And the best solution for a player who's in James's position, and Eric Williams comes to mind as a guy who the Ravens got at the end of his career with the Cowboys. Great career there. Came to Baltimore, looked to me like he had pretty much given up on the game, but they signed him to one of these starting week two deals, and he barely got on the field for the Ravens during his time there. It was cut eventually before the year ended. I don't think that's an unrealistic place for Juwan James to end. It's not easy for me to gauge how much other interest there would be in the league for him on some other team that might essentially burn the Ravens out of what they've got in terms of an option right now, if they were to cut him. So that's Ravens obviously have to kind of play that game and try and understand what's the value of this thing I have right now and what am I putting at risk by cutting it.
Yeah. I think that's really going to depend on how he looks. And if he looks like someone who's a starting caliber player, I don't think you risk cutting him.
Right. I agree.
So if he looks like he's someone who's like, kind of getting there on the verge, maybe. I mean, is it potential that he could even start the season on the PUP list still, right? Or is that, I'm not even sure how that works, it being like so far away removed from football.
I don't know I'm not actually sure where he is right now in terms of his roster status right now, but he might be able to be on the PUP list right now.
Yeah. So there potentially could be some roster flexibility with him, even if he's not cut. That's something that, you know, I'm sure that's going to go into the calculus of determining what his status will be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fair enough. My third thing, you know, it's after the health thing, but is that the injuries and age have not taken their toll and he still can be effective as a backup if called upon. You know, we just got a pretty good jolt last year from a guy who was actually playing at his original position. Talking about Alejandro Villanueva playing out of position is not reasonable. He was left tackle his whole career at Pittsburgh. Yeah. That's, you know, where he rolled up some decent PFF scoring, at least, whether you want to really roll into that. What we noticed as a player with him is that he really was a guy who didn't keep his balance very well, gave up a lot of pressures between 2.5 and 3 seconds, and was a much more significant liability than the PFF scores would indicate. I'm concerned about relying too much on 3-year-old PFF scores to rely on James for 2022.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really just depends on how he looks, and he's going to have to be healthy in training camp, I think, in order for him to make the roster. And he has to not only be healthy, but he has to look like a player who can be a quality starter for you if called upon. And right. I think that's just the bottom line.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Do you want to start with a good year for or do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think a good year would be, like we started with health. I mean, that's where it starts. He has to be healthy. And I think he has to look adequate enough to be a backup for you. And mm-hmm. if that means he has to come in certain situations because of injury, maybe some days he's inactive, some games he's active. But if he can be someone you can count on, that's at least in a backup role, that would be a good year for him.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement. He doesn't, a good year does not even depend on playing time for him. It depends on being healthy, being effective enough in the preseason, being effective enough in practice that the Ravens decide he's a guy that they want to bank on as a backup. And if they don't ever have to put him on the field, that's a damn good thing, because it means that Stanley is probably healthy. It means that, you know, Moses or Falele is doing the job well enough that they don't need him. Great. Let's do it that way. And if they can save a few bucks by cutting him and paying him week to week, and they do that anyway because they like what he's doing in practice, that's good too. And any way you look at it, I think that if the Ravens decide to pay him, it's probably a good year for him.
Yeah, and then for a great year, I mean, I think whether it's by course of injury or by, you know, his own just ability, if he can come out and be a starting right tackle and play, you know, above average in that position for the Ravens, that's a great year. I mean, because a good above average right tackle will be very important for this offense. And the tackle position has been a deficit the past 2 years. And if, especially if you get Stanley back on the left side and you can have a quality starting right tackle opposite of him, that's going to go a long way to getting the offense back on track.
That's fair enough. That certainly would be great. I worded it a little differently. Provides an important insurance policy and is effective when called upon at right tackle as an extra offensive lineman or on field goal formations. I think that's his only real special teams usage, so I wanted to put mm-hmm. that in there. As an extra offensive lineman, he potentially could be used the same way that Falele could be used. And I still think in a great year, in an ideal sense, you probably kind of hope he isn't called upon. I think it's so unlikely that his play demands that he be put in unless Stanley actually, you know, is injured again. And I don't know how that ends up being good for the Ravens. I can't manufacture a situation where that would be, but I guess he could still bail the Ravens out, I guess, if somebody moved to left tackle. So, all right. Anything else? I'm sorry.
No. I mean, I think you said it. I mean, it might be great for James, but not great for the Ravens. If he's a starting player for them this year, I will say that.
Yeah. Fair enough. Anyway, Gabe, always fun to talk football with you. This has been a great discussion. And, you know, these are the kind of interesting fringe, you know, playing time players that are very interesting to talk about. I think we're both kind of optimistic on what Washington might do. I'm probably a little more pessimistic on who James is right now and you know, what the Ravens may rely on. But this is just a great discussion all the way through, and really appreciate you coming on. Tell folks where the people can talk football with you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Gabe Fergie. You know, it's kind of the off-season gloomies right now. There's not much going on, but it's also an opportunity to kind of look back and reevaluate, look at different players, look at some of the unique things that the Ravens did over the past couple of years, and see, you know, what we might be looking forward to in the coming year. So, you know, I'm, you know, putting out interesting maybe comments on Twitter. I'm not so much breaking down film or anything right now, but I might get into that a little later into the off season as we head into training camp. But co-host of the Ravens, the Situation Room podcast. We like to break down games right after they occur and talk about some of those important plays that happen. Look at some of the decision-making, the play calling that went into it, and kind of break it down from that angle.
All right. Outstanding pod. Give that a chance, guys, if you haven't already. Also, make sure you follow at Gabe Fergie and at Raven Sit Room, regular contributors to this show. If you've heard them on before, you know how good they are, and they're really worth following. If you're out there and you'd love to be on a film study short this summer, I'd love to have you. Send me a DM on Twitter. They're always open. I will respond to you quickly. Best topic is very narrow. We can finish it in 25 or 30 minutes. But if you have an idea for a series where you really want to delve into something more deeply, that's fine too. I'd love to do a 3 or 4 episode series. And I've got several of those this summer that we're working on. Every one of them I'm finding to be intriguing in terms of the discussion. Gabe, wonderful to have you on. Thanks again for coming.
Thanks again, Ken. Looking forward to the next time.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.